Joining me in the Catalyst studio today is Jessica Ravelli, who is the founder of Working Women of Tampa Bay. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So we do a series called Origin Story, which is why we're here today. And so we're going to go way back to the very beginning.
Yeah.
Tell us about the months and days that led up from the idea to the first little sprout of Working Women of Tampa Bay.
Yeah, which is, it's been 10 years now. So I have to like reach back very far into my brain, it feels like sometimes. It's a pretty interesting story because my background is actually broadcast news. I was a television news producer and worked at four different TV stations over the 10 years that I was in TV and loved it. But I kind of saw the writing on the wall that journalism wasn't quite being journalism anymore. And this was right around the time that, you know, Facebook was becoming mainstream, Twitter was becoming mainstream. I definitely saw that there was a lot of power in social media. And so I saw the writing on the wall that even though, you know, journalism was a fantastic profession, I saw that it was being watered down. And so, you know, my job as a news producer creating basically like the nightly news locally was not going to be long term for me, which was a shame because I was really excited to be a journalist and went to school for it. But I was sensing a feeling like I was going to need to do a life pivot. And so at that time, I was in my, you know, kind of mid to late 20s. And I was like, okay, what am I going to be when I grow up? Again, for my second chapter. So I started networking. I got invited to a lot of different networking opportunities, chambers, philanthropy events. I mean, you name it. I kind of did what I call like the Goldilocks adventure about 10 years ago. And I was like testing different organizations to see if they were a good fit for me. And for, you know, a female professional in their mid to late 20s, nothing fit at all. They were either too expensive, they weren't at the right time of day. There was a whole lot of like lunches and morning meetings, and I was only available for evenings. I mean, there was a lot of things that just, you know, like I said, I just couldn't find the right fit for me. And so I had this wild, crazy idea that I'd actually start something. And I always think back now that I'm in my mid to late 30s, like, would I take the chance to start it again? And I was so young that I didn't understand the consequences of what if it failed, but I did. I just was like, okay, I'm just going to start something. And I had a great group of women around me at the time, a great tribe. And I went to them and I said, what do you think of this idea? And, you know, some people thought it was great. Some people thought I was crazy, but even if they thought I was crazy, they decided to support it. So we actually started with just one event. It was at Casatina's, which is a women-owned business over in the Dunedin area. I think they just celebrated their 30th anniversary, from what I understand. So they've been in the game a little bit longer than me. And the premise was just anybody was invited, any working woman. That's why we named it Working Women, was because I wanted it to convey the fact that, you know, anybody could come. Because so many women's organizations at that time or other organizations had executives or entrepreneurs or different words in their title that made it seem exclusive instead of inclusive. So that's really it. I mean, I came up with the idea in October of 2008, which is really funny because I think that was right around the time that the sky was falling from an economic perspective. Came up with the idea within 1 month, had it up and running. We did our very first event at Casatina's. It was completely sold out. And then the next 6 months is just, let's keep doing these events. And then before you know it, boom, it was like we had a full-fledged networking organization under our hands. But it really was just trying to fill a personal void for me. And I just figured I'd give it a shot and never really, I never thought that it would flash forward 10 years later that we'd be the largest women's group in Tampa Bay.
So when you were hitting the events, the different networking opportunities, what were you presenting as at those before you started this? Because you were kind of post TV and pre this. What did you say you were at that point?
Oh, so I actually stayed in TV.
You stayed in TV.
Yeah, so I don't think they would like to know that's part of the story. But I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs that did what, you know, the side hustle or the side gig. And because it is, it's hard to start something when you need to have some sort of financial sustainability, right? So yeah, I started it while I was still in TV, and then it ramped up, and I came to the conclusion that, or I basically said to myself, like, you either need to leave TV or you need to let this go. I was beyond my emotional, spiritual, physical capacity to, you know, work 40 hours or more and then run this at the same time. So that's how I made the decision to switch.
How long did that take?
It was 16 months, which literally felt like the longest 16 months of my entire life. I always make a joke that like I could cry at the snap of a finger. And it was just because I was just so exhausted. Because I would come home from, you know, producing, you know, an entire day's worth of news. And then, boom, I'd flip a switch and go right into working women mode, building it out, whether that was networking on social media or going to events. So there was that, you know, incubation time of working women where I could only give it a certain amount of time. But at the same time, I wasn't panicked because it wasn't my bread and butter. So it was a great opportunity to kind of grow it without, you know, fearing that I wasn't able to put food on the table.
And what were the key drivers? If you say this is the value in the very beginning, obviously you were serving women.
Right.
But beyond that, you said you had some unique opportunities you found from what the other places were lacking. Yeah. So what were the core tenets that were sticking out at the beginning?
Yeah, the core tenets then are still our core tenets now. I've really stuck to that, which is affordability. A lot of the stuff that I was attending back in the day either had a really high price for individual events or the membership fee was just not, you know, not something that someone in their like mid to late 20s could afford or someone who was starting in their own business could afford. So affordability was really important. In fact, we just started with 6 months for $50 because I figured almost everybody, you know, that could almost be an impulse buy for a lot of people. And then also the affordability of the event. So for instance, right now, our coffees are still only $5, which are absolute crazy. But and then accessibility. So the other thing was just the other networking organizations, their events were only in the evening or only at lunch or, you know, there wasn't a ton of events at a ton of different times all over Tampa Bay. And that's what we've been really become known for. So we do up to 20 events a month all over Tampa Bay, all of Pinellas County, all of Hillsborough County, occasionally in Pasco. You know, we've done events down south in Venice and Sarasota as well. So, you know, basically, somebody can join our organization, you know, pay a small amount to come, and then they have the ability to go all over Tampa Bay. The other thing is the public can come to our events. So we don't have this, you know, members only kind of philosophy. So for the last 10 years, we've had guests coming to our event that just pay a guest fee. So that's how we've been able to serve, you know, 10, 20,000 women over the last 10 years is that we have an open door policy. So many other organizations are before you can even walk in the door, you've got to be a member or you've got to be a guest of a member. We don't have any of those rules. Basically, you just go on our website and you pay the guest fee and you can come as many times as you want. We don't have a, you know, kind of hardcore recruiting philosophy. So we have women that maybe have come on and off for the last 10 years and never become a member. But we feel like that's a value and an asset to our organization because there's always fresh faces at our event. So after 10 years, we still have managed to have, you know, a ratio of, you know, 30 to 40% new faces at almost everything so that it just keeps it fresh and that there's constantly new women to connect with. So I think that open door philosophy or open door policy really makes people feel comfortable when they come to things. And then, like I said, it continues to add to, and the fact that we're still growing 10 years later, I think is a testament to the fact that we are so open and inviting to, you know, all women within the Tampa Bay area to come and check it out. They don't have to necessarily join right away.
So you talked about affordability as being one of the cores of Working Women of Tampa Bay. Most people, when they get into business, there's sort of what I would call, there's an evolution of that business, right? So they say, I'm here at the beginning, and then they move on a little bit, and they sort of move up into different tiers of success. And, you know, the ones who can make it, which is obviously not the majority, but the ones who do make it up, they sort of evolve out of a lot of these types of things and into, you know, some of these different places and whatnot. So for you personally, you know, what's your personal evolution considering that you're really inviting that sort of same beginning business person or, you know, in that place in their career over and over and over again, 10 years later, you know, it's sort of the same process. It's almost like being a teacher where you get the same class, every year, and you know where they're just ready to learn to read, and you have to go through that process of teaching them to read every year. How have you handled your own need for growing in that way? Obviously, numbers count because you're getting bigger, but
yeah, you know, I think you're right, and so you know, we definitely tend to cater to women who are kind of you know under 5 years in their business and they're growing, and a lot of our you know even our education because a good chunk of what we do is education for the women in our organization. So I would say that it is kind of like we're almost like bringing on like a new class like every year. But we've had women that have stayed with us for 10 years as well. So I think there's a careful balance between creating programming for the women who are just starting who may need a little bit more love and support and maybe also affordability as far as some of the programming that we do. But then, you know, we've continued to elevate our programming so that women in our organization who are a little bit more seasoned can take advantage of, you know, events that are a little bit, you know, higher level, a little bit more expensive. So we have, you know, events as low as like $5 for the coffees. But then we have a conference that we put on in September that has a $100 plus price point that is more toward, you know, like a seasoned professional or a seasoned entrepreneur that's looking for growth. And then as far as I go, you know, that's a really good question. I mean, I think that we've been blessed with some consistency in our tribe. And so I haven't had to go too far out there, you know, far beyond our organization or our circle to be able to continue to grow. But, you know, I do look at other organizations in Tampa Bay to help fill me up. And then there's also just professional development that I might get through reading and learning and stuff like that. So, but it's a careful balance to be able to evolve working women. And then, of course, like, you know, for me as personal growth, you know, it's like I have to kind of almost come up alongside it. I think when you're the founder and you have your hands, you know, as deep into it as I do, it almost becomes like one and the same. And so it is sometimes hard for me to separate myself from the organization. So I think I've actually been selfish that a lot of the programming that I've created, especially in the last 5 years, is because I actually want that programming. And I do sit on a good chunk of all of our educational stuff, especially, you know, like I'm thinking of, we do a lunch every March for International Women's Day. And so last year we had Nicole Stott, who is a former astronaut. She actually, I think, was on the ISS twice. And she actually lives right here in St. Pete. She grew up here. And, you know, went out to the Cape, went out to Houston, and now is retired back here in St. Pete. And so, I mean, I booked her because she's fabulous, but also because I wanted to hear, you know, the stories of an astronaut, right? And her trips to the ISS. So, yeah, I think I've been selfish in continuing to evolve working women. So it's grown with me. But at the same time, we make sure that there's still, even though, like, I don't need small business 101 anymore, I realize that some of our members do, especially those who are just like, you know, pivoting from like corporate into entrepreneurship. So I make sure to balance out the schedule so that there's still programming for, like you said, that incoming class of members that need a little bit more of kind of that 101 education as opposed to, you know, something that's a little bit higher up.
So tell me about, you mentioned being the founder. Tell me about how the team grew. You've done most everything. At some point, are you still organizing and doing every single event, or what's the team look like now?
Yeah, and that's hard too. I think it's really hard when you are the founder of something to break away from it. It took me a long time to give away the little bit that I have given away. The most important change, and this happened, I want to say 5-6 years ago, maybe even longer now, was the introduction of ambassadors. So we have a team of 20 plus women around Tampa Bay. And they're the ones who are greeting and welcoming everyone. And we'll use the term running events. I quickly learned after a couple of years that unless I, you know, become I Dream of Jeannie or, you know, Bewitched, that I, especially with the amount of traffic that we've now decided to fill here in Tampa Bay, there's no way that I'm driving around Tampa Bay going to everything, especially at 9 o'clock in the morning when most of the coffees happen. So the first piece I gave away was being at every event and almost like being the face of events, right? So now I walk into events and sometimes people don't know who I am. And that doesn't bother me at all because...
That should feel great.
That was always what I wanted was I never wanted working women to be Jessica Ravelli. I wanted working women to be its own entity and a legacy that I could leave Tampa Bay so that if I ever did need to step away from the organization, that it would have legs, that it wasn't attached to me. So that was an important piece. And so now, like I said, I'm only at a handful of events. And what's cool is that the ambassadors that run certain events, like the coffees, like here in St. Pete, rather, Brandy Morris runs our St. Pete coffee. She's actually our oldest ambassador in our, as in tenure. And that coffee is the longest running coffee that we have. And so those women know her. I actually went to one last week because we gave some seed money away to the woman who was hosting, Alyssa Marie, who has Alyssa Marie's Gallery on Beach. And like there was a chunk of women that did not know me in that room. And it was, and I loved that. And so that was always my goal. So that, and then the other pieces I gave away were things that I knew I wasn't good at. So right away, gave away my books, gave away my accounting, gave away my graphic design, gave away my website. I was doing all of that in the very beginning because there was hardly any income coming in. So my model is volunteers and ambassadors that basically kind of run the like day-to-day meetings and so forth. And then a team of women that are also business owners that I contract out all of the things that I feel like I'm not good at, or at least that might feel tedious or that I don't love. And that's where 10 years later, that's where I've come to be. One story is that I kept thinking I needed a personal assistant. And so for like several years in a row, I would hire personal assistants just to kind of almost be like a, you know, the catch-all and handle just in case something fell through the cracks. And I found having a personal assistant drove me more crazy than doing the work. And so maybe I need a mental health professional because of that. I don't know. But I ended up, you know, 5 years ago, I think it was, I just said no more about these personal assistants. The idea was lovely and probably would fit very easily into the 4-hour work week, which I mentioned earlier in the other part. But yeah, I learned that that wasn't a good fit for me. So not all business owners need to have a certain model of staffing. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different way they want to work. And so for me, I didn't need that extra person to kind of be an assistant. I needed to just sub out the things that I found tedious or I wasn't good at.
You said that you went full-time about 16 months in. And so usually in that case, we'll call them the suffer years, are like 2, 3, 4, and 5. At any point in 2, 3, and 4, and 5, did you say, you know, were you ever close to going back to a full-time job, or you were cruising and it was just eyes straight ahead the whole time?
Yeah, I was really lucky that during that, you know, 16 months of incubation time where I was able to, you know, make enough money to keep me sustainable, I was able to ramp up working women so that when I did leave TV, it was like a light switch turned on. And at that point, we've been rocking and rolling ever since. It was funny. I had Mike Deason, who's a local investigative reporter. I remember him sitting across from me like in the last week of my TV career. And he was like, Jessica, just so you know, you can always come back. And I just laughed at him. And I'm like, oh, no, Deason, there will not be any going back. So maybe there was a mental piece where I was like, I didn't give myself a choice that I would ever look back and go back into working. I don't think I would ever rule that out because you never know what amazing, cool opportunity could come that would steer me away from, you know, being an entrepreneur and running my own company. But I will say nothing beats this lifestyle. I mean, I absolutely love it. I think I was always a little bit of, you know, anti-authority. Even when I was like a child, I was always the one kind of, you know, not wanting to settle for the status quo. And it was actually what I bumped up a lot into when I was in corporate America, was I was one of those people that just didn't, you know, just because somebody said this is the way it was done, I didn't take that. And I often pushed back and I often got in trouble in my corporate career for doing that. Now I realize, wow, what an asset that is to being an entrepreneur, because you're not caught up in this is the way it's always been done. So I think at this point, it'd be really hard for me to pivot back into, you know, having a boss, even though I'm sure, you know, I think of my clients almost as my boss and I have 700 plus of them. But as far as the growth factor, we've been steady now for the last 7 years. We continue to hit new benchmarks as far as the number of women, the number of events, the quality of events. So I've really been lucky. But I have had to get used to that, you know, like let's say the month of December, you know, most people are involved in holidays, vacations. And so, you know, my revenue stream maybe in December is like 1/4 of what it is in January. And so after a couple of years, you get used to that. You don't get panicked in December because you know that you're going to have a fabulous January. And I think that is a huge business lesson for every entrepreneur in their first startup, is getting used to that cyclical nature. So, but we've really been blessed that we've grown strong and steady from the point that I left TV.
So let's get a few more business lessons from you. So if you, what are the patterns that you see often that you wish, if you could just get this, you know, in folks' head when they get started, it would save them time and grief, or, you know, help accelerate them. What are some of the big patterns that you see that are throw at people?
Well, a lot of them I've already mentioned that I did, and it took me time to get over those. And one of those is not hiring out those critical jobs early on. So I did do my books and my accounting for the first couple of years, and it was horrible. And I think having like an accountant or bookkeeper or even some sort of financial advisor to be able to go in and look over your books, they're able to see things that you don't because you're too much into the business. So you don't see patterns. You don't necessarily see the growth. Like you might be having amazing growth or you may be having an increase in expenses. And so, you know, hiring out, especially your books and your bookkeeping, accounting, I think is a huge asset to the financial health of your business. Also, you know, I wish I had, you know, had a good, you know, a small business attorney earlier on that maybe like I could have been able to go to when I had, you know, contract questions. So I think when a small business gets up and running, they should surround themselves with a good CPA, a good small business attorney, you know, a good marketing person that they don't necessarily have to hire full time, but maybe somebody that they can outsource some of their marketing. But, you know, the luxury that the bigger businesses have is they have these like CMOs, COOs, CFOs. And so it's that brain power all working on one vision. And so often a small business owner, an entrepreneur doesn't have all those different people. So I think that's a big piece of business advice. We talked about being okay with the cyclical nature of business. With that comes, I see a lot of solo entrepreneurs, especially service practitioners, who they network, they get the business, they execute the business, and then they hit some sort of lull in their business cycle because when they were executing their business, they weren't out there networking. And so they fill their pipeline and then it dries up again. And so I think having a better strategy on, you know, it's that whole feast or famine thing. If there's a strategy on, I'm going to keep networking while I'm executing this business or whatever it takes, because every, you know, every business is a little bit different, but it's something I see all the time that I just wish I could kind of like break them from that cycle because then they panic, right? The pipeline dries up, they panic, they get into like that deer in the headlights mode. They start questioning why they left corporate America or why they're on their own, you know, and then it freezes them and then they start the process all over and it just seems like there's a real loss of productivity and loss of revenue. So that would be another thing that I see all the time. And then follow up, you know, I mean, so often I've put out feelers for opportunities and just not got anything back. So whether people aren't reading their emails or they're just not taking time in their day to follow up on opportunities, I just feel like there's probably a ton of money being left on the table locally when from small business owners who maybe they've gotten themselves so busy that they're not able to take advantage of more business coming through their door. If you're going to hire out, the role that you should be looking at hiring out would be, you know, someone that can be a part of that revenue generating, or at least making sure that you're making the most out of opportunities that come your way. Because I think people just get so busy with the current work that they have that they're just not answering even like legitimate opportunities for more revenue to come in, which is just crazy, right?
And a lot of that is with the quantity of information. And that kind of brings me to my next question, which is what's the biggest change you've seen of the women who are coming into Working Women of Tampa Bay in year one versus the women that are coming into Working Women of Tampa Bay in year 10?
Well, you know, 10 years ago, the economy was just so different. We were dealing with a lot of people being laid off, or maybe they were, you know, not unemployed, but they were underemployed. Or you had situations where maybe that person was the caregiver in the household and was working maybe part-time, but then their husband got laid off. So I think that there was a lot of economic uncertainties in 08, 09, 2010 that the women who were attracted to the group were more focused on revenue generating because at the time, that's exactly what they needed. I mean, we were in an economic situation where people were worried about putting food on their table. And so they were looking at networking as, I need to make a sale, I need to get a job or whatever it was. So they were maybe a little bit, I'm going to say maybe more transactional. Mm-hmm. And so flash forward 10 years, I mean, we've had some great, you know, economic success over the last 10 years. I mean, you know, look at downtown St. Pete. I would say there's probably a new business opening every day in downtown St. Pete, and most likely probably a restaurant because there's so many restaurants. So I think now 10 years later, the women that are coming into the group are in it for, because they're actually looking more for like a supportive tribe of women to support their ideas. I'm seeing a lot more innovation, a lot more entrepreneurship. a lot more like women who are coming to the table with creative ideas. And I think it's because when you are a little bit more economically stable and you're not worried about putting food on the table, it frees you up to kind of dream bigger. And so it kind of reminds me of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so, you know, back then they were really worried about, you know, food and shelter. And now, you know, this group of women is actually looking at, you know, actualizing their dreams. So it's a more passionate, ambitious group, where I would say 10 years ago, it's a little bit more hungry, determined group. But it's just so cool to see all the amazing ideas that women are coming up with locally. It blows my mind to think if all of these ideas came to fruition, what kind of economy would we have to have all these, you know, growing, innovative businesses being owned by women in Tampa Bay, you know?
How much does activism or politics or, you know, obviously there are issues that are specific to women. And when you have women gathering, I'm sure those come up. So what role does working women in Tampa Bay play in that space?
None. We are so careful. Going back to what were the tenets, no politics, no religion, no, you know, anything that, you know, could create debate is kind of left at the door. And that's because we want to free women up to be very purposeful, that when they're at Working Women, we're here to do business. And so often those kind of topics can, you know, distract or cloud what is, you know, the number one purpose for being involved in our group. I mean, we have women who have become best friends, have, you know, been in each other's weddings, who are godmothers to their babies. I mean, so it's not like we're not creating real friendships in the group, but that is not the primary purpose. I mean, the primary purpose comes back to growing your network and creating more opportunities for business, or at least for growth. And so do we have women in our organization that are really passionate about politics or issues? Oh, yes. You know, we have elected officials in our group. I'm sure we have activists, and we have women who are very active within their churches and their, you know, religions, but they, you know, park that at the door. And when they show up at Working Women, it's about who they are as a business owner, or who do they work for, what opportunities there are to collaborate, connect, share resources. That seems to be the focus. And so we've been really lucky over the last 10 years that we haven't been bogged down with getting too involved in politics. And as much as, you know, I have my own political views, especially about traffic, you know, it's just, if we go down that road, it could easily take over. Like, let's say we're having a meeting. If we start talking about transportation in that meeting, it could literally take up an entire meeting and the meeting after that.
Wonderful. So what's in 2019 hold for you and beyond?
Yeah. So we celebrate 10 years this year in June. So that's exciting. So we've been thinking, you know, what are we going to do to ramp up this upcoming year to in celebration of the 10-year anniversary? We have a big conference in September every year. So that's going to go from 1 day to 2 days. And we're looking to add an award ceremony to celebrate some local women that are doing amazing, cool things, and adding some fundraiser aspect to the conference so that we can be giving back and continuing to fill up that seed money fund that we talked about. So more events, some celebratory events for sure. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, my job is to continue to find cool women to spotlight and to feature. And so I am always on the hunt for those women, and that won't change in 2019. And we've been really lucky that we've been able to bring some really cool people to Tampa Bay. We've been lucky to bring in some really cool women into Tampa Bay, including like the founder of Brownie Brittle and founder of Cotton Colors. So that's what we'll continue to do in 2019, is celebrate the women locally that are doing cool things, but also bring in some women who have multi-million dollar companies or working on cool projects outside of Tampa Bay, just to show, you know, what else is out there, and to continue and inspire and motivate the members and our guests to, you know, live their best life in 2019. So we're really excited just to, you know, to continue to be doing what we're doing 10 years in, and to continue to be growing after 10 years. I never thought that after 10 years that we would continue to break new records as far as number of women and number of events that we did. I always thought we would have hit a capacity by now, and shockingly, we haven't.
It's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.